Okay, Erev Tov, hope everybody's doing well. We can get started. Okay, B'chukotai, we're going to end, at least those of us who are in Chutz Larch, which I assume is all of us. If you're not, you can let me know. But we're going to end Sefer Vayikra this week. And actually, as we'll see, we're supposed to, this is one of the reasons we have this, quirky thing that I do think we should change. I really do. But why we didn't join together Parshas Achrimot and Kedoshim and catch up to Israel right away, why we're waiting till Matan Masai in the end of this, right before Tisha B'Av. So the Gemara tells us that Ezra made a takana, that Ezra and Moshe Rabbeinu were the two people who established the notion of reading the Torah all the time. I've mentioned this before. Moshe is a rabbi, not as God's messenger of the Torah. Moshe, as a rabbinic law, instituted the notion of reading Torah, I believe, on Shabbos mornings. And Ezra came along and said we should read on Mondays and Thursdays and Shabbos at Mincha and three Aliyot. So, and we know, by the way, the Gemara and other places actually compares Ezra to Moshe. Ezra was considered a second Moshe. The Gemara has this amazing, almost sort of crazy statement that really Ezra should have gotten the Torah, but what could he do? Moshe beat him to it. He was born too late, so he couldn't get the Torah. So God, as a consolation prize, changed the font of the Torah. We have the Ketav Ashurit, that the Assyrian script. I forget the name. Ketav Ivri Palin something. I forget the fancy English or Latin name for the old Paloyo script that the Torah, according at least to many commentators, was given not in the script we had. If we were to find Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah, we wouldn't be able to read it. It would be in this other font. And it was changed because Ezra really should have gotten the Torah. So the Gemara has a lot of comparison between Ezra and Moshe. Anyway, Ezra made a decree that we should read the curses, the Tochacha, in Torah Kohanim, that's how he phrases it, in the book of Vayikra before Shavuot. And we should read the Klalot in Dvarim, in Kitavo, before Rosh Hashanah. And why should we do that? Why should we read it before Shavuot and Rosh Hashanah? Anybody want to chime in a little bit? Okay, I guess I'll have to chime in. So the Gemara says, Kadesha Tichla Shana Ukililoteha, that the year should end and its curses. So we want to get rid of, before we come into the new year, let's get rid of all the curses. This is a cursed year, COVID, war, terrible things, school shootings. Let's get rid of all the horrific curses and we can start the new year fresh. So the Gemara says, that's great. That's great. In Dvarim, that's I understand Kitavo. But Bechukotai, I don't know. I didn't know that Rosh Hashanah is around the corner. So how can you say that we should read it on Rosh Hashanah before the new year? So the Gemara said, no, it is a Rosh. It's a new year. When's the new year? When's the next new year? I'm trying to get somebody to answer. When's our next new year? It's not a hard guess. Tova, come on. When's the new year? So the Gemara says the New Year's on Shavuos. Didn't you know that? How do we know the New Year's on Shavuos? Because the Gemara says, I'm sorry?
Chag Leilanot.
Right. No, so that's Tu Bishvat Chag Leilanot. Although, you're right. We're going to get there. Good. The Gemara says that Rosh Hashanah is in, Shavuos is a new year. Atzeret, as it's called. Atzeret, Shavuos is a new year. Because the Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah tells us, Ba'arba Prakim Olam Nidon, four times the world is judged. We're judged on Pesach for wheat, Tua, Shavuot for Peirot Ha'ilan, the fruit of the tree. On Rosh Hashanah, Koba Eolam Ovrin Lefanav Kivnei Maron. On Rosh Hashanah, the entire world passes through one by one, like sheep, let's say. That's the big Yom Hadin. And on Sukkot, Bechag Nidonim Al Hamayim. And on Sukkot, we're judged for water. So the Gemara says, therefore, it's a Rosh Hashanah. So, of course, the Gemara doesn't seem to make any sense. That's the second mission of Rosh Hashanah. The first mission of Rosh Hashanah says, Arba Rosh Hashanah. There are four Rosh Hashanahs. There are four New Years. There's the New Year on January 1st, and then there's the New Year of the school year, the day after Labor Day, and then there's the New Year for the baseball season, and there's the New Year for my corporate year end. Everybody has a bunch of year ends. So the Mishnah says there are four year ends. There are four year ends. So the big one, the one we like the most, is on Tishrei, but Pesach, Nisan is a new year, the first of Nisan. That's what the Torah says. Rosh Chodesh, the first of the months is Nisan. And Elul is a Rosh Hashanah, the first of Elul for Masar Behema, for the tithing of animals. And Tu Bishvat is a new year for the trees. And then the next Mishnah says there are four times, the four periods the world is judged, and they're not the same. Only Rosh Hashanah is the same. In other words, only Rosh Hashanah is both a Yom HaDin and a New Year. The other are Yemei HaDin, days of judgment, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. None of them are New Years. The New Years are Rosh Chodesh Nisan. We don't have a New Year, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. So what's the Gemara telling us? That because the world is judged for fruit on Shavuot, therefore it's a New Year. And therefore we have to read the curses in Bechukotai, because we want to read the curses before the year ends. We want to get rid of all the curses during the year. So I didn't see anybody directly ask that question. I probably didn't look hard enough. But what must be is that the Yom HaDin, a Yom HaDin is also a new year. There are four new years. What do you mean it's a Yom HaDin? It's a day of judgment. So a day of judgment is God says, how do we perform the last year? And he's going to judge us. And then after the judgment is over, we move forward to a new year. Otherwise, I don't understand what the Gemara is saying. So, but the Gemara is equating a new year to a day of judgment. In other words, that's true on Rosh Hashanah. But it's not only true on Rosh Hashanah, it's true on Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. It's a new year. It's a day of judgment. And because it's a day of judgments, it's a new year. But anyways, that's what the Gemara says, that Ezra made a decree that we should read these curses before Shavuot. Now, you have to realize in the time of Ezra, they didn't have Kriyas HaTorah the way we have Kriyas HaTorah. They didn't read the Torah once a year. Like, the way we read it is Parshat Bechukotai comes up always right before Shavuot. In the time of Ezra, maybe they had a three-year cycle like they had in Israel. And it could be that week they didn't do any cycle. They only read this. In other words, this wasn't the Parshat HaShavuah. It happens to be Parshat HaShavuah B'chukotai. That's the way we do it. Ezra made, wherever they were reading the Torah from, they had to stop and they had to read the curses. They didn't necessarily read the entire Parsha. Tosfot points out, hold on a second. Shavuos is not this week. Shavuos is next week. So we're going to wait. We're going to wait a week and a half to read it. So Tosfot says, yeah, it's not nice. It's true. In other words, Tosfot seems to say that we changed the practice. Now, really, Ezra would want us to read Bechukotai next week, right? The week be like Mamash next week is Erev Shavuos. Next Shabbos to read it, and then that night is Shavuot. But Tosfot says the practice developed. We want to wait a week. It's not so nice. We don't want to go into the year on the curses. So we do Bamidbar as a sort of a segue. And the same thing, we never read Kitavo with the curses in Dvarim right before Rosh Hashanah. We wait. We have the break. Either Kitavo generally Nitzavim or Nitzavim and Vayelech. And Tosfot says,
But catching up, if we would have done...
Yes, if we were to catch what some say, right. So,
and in Israel, because I would have been closer to Shavuos.
Right, so that's away. What some people say. The reason we don't catch up is because if we caught up, Bechukotai would be 2 weeks before Shavuot. I agree. That's why I started this year saying...
No, Bechukotai...
They already read it last week in Israel. They already read it.
Bechukotai is 2 weeks before Shavuos now. Had we caught up...
It'd be three weeks or 2 weeks, whatever. It'd be the third week before. Yeah, correct. That is correct. Right. I still think it's worth it. If it was up to me.
I heard a different reason. I heard a different reason. I heard that Bamidbar has to be the Shabbos before Shavuos.
Okay.
And since Bamidbar is the Shabbos before Shavuos, is impossible this year in Israel. At least in Chutz Laaretz, it's possible.
Right. So the Gemara, if you want, I figured maybe later I can show you the Gemara. That may be true in other sources, but the Gemara in Megillah on 31a says that Ezra tikein shiukorim beklalot sheva sefer Torah Kohanim. They read the curses. It's not about Bamidbar. It's about Bechukotai. And Tosfot says, because we don't want to do it so close, we throw in Bamidbar. But it's not because it's Bamidbar. Whatever the next parsha would happen to be, it has nothing to do with Bamidbar. Yes, I grew up learning that we always read Bamidbar before Shavuot because the Jews got the Torah in the desert. and the purpose of the Torah is to give us life, and the desert is death, and you know, nothing in the desert, nothing grows, and the Torah miraculously everything grew. It's all beautiful, and it's all maybe true, but it's like post-Talmudic. That's not the reason given. It's kind of like what we've spoken a number of times, why we don't say Hallel on the last days of Pesach. So you ask,
yeah, but the other reason Bukosai before Shavuos is just the opposite. Had we caught up beforehand,
right, it would be correct. Right. You're saying Tosfot said, let's add a week. If we were in Israel, they're adding 2 weeks because they have no choice. Of course, obviously the entire Kriyas HaTorah was set up in Chutz Laaretz. I mean, Tosfot, you know, you think about it. The temple's destroyed in the year 70. Think of what changed in Judaism from the year 70 to 1948. There was no Mishnah. There was no Gemara. There was no Rambam. There was no Shulchan Aruch. There was no Rashi. There was no nothing. The Torah was a totally different way of life. So all these laws, how to read the Torah, has nothing to do with the land of Israel. We've said it before. Simchas Torah has not. It's very difficult to observe Simchas Torah in Israel. It's like it's a contrast. The way we observe it today, Simchas Torah and Shmini Atzeret are like opposite days. Shmini Atzeret is very serious. Yortz Yisker and Kittel and Geshem and Simchas Torah frivolity. And the 2 days don't go together. But in Chutz Laaretz, so we have 1 day for the seriousness and 1 day for the fun. That's basically what we do. We come to Israel, we combine them because there was no Simchas Torah in Israel. Simchas Torah not in Torah. That's a made up. It is a made up holiday. It's a beautiful made up holiday. The rabbis made it up in the 11th century. We had a Yontif. We had nothing to do on the Yontif. Shmini Atzeret has nothing to it, right? The Rashi, the famous Midrash, Shmini Atzeret has no purpose. We've had so much Yontif, so much holiday. Kashelipri.com. It's very difficult after Elul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot and Chol HaMoed. Don't just Chol HaMoed just end. We go home. No, let's have another day to have the love of God and the Jewish people. So Simchas Torah already, Shmini Atzeret already has nothing. There's no mamashut. There's no sukkah. There's no lulav. There's no nothing. Just pure joy. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. Pure joy of being in the presence of God. But there's no mitzvah of the day. So now we come to Chutz Laaretz. So you have 2 days of no mitzvahs. That was too much. So the rabbis invented Simchas Torah. We were reading it to finishing the Torah. That's not in the Torah anywhere. That's the whole thing is rabbinic. We have to read it. It's the most important rabbinic mitzvah there is. If we didn't have Kriyas HaTorah every Shabbos, people would open up the Chumash as often as they open up Shmuel Beit. When's the last time you opened up Yoshua, Yishai? You know, you don't open up. Nobody opens up Tanakh. Okay, 929. So a few people open up Tanakh once in a while. We never open up Tanakh. Parshat Yeshua is the most brilliant rabbinic law there is. You think about it, but it's all rabbinic. So therefore, you know, the whole system was only developed in Chutz Laaretz. So now we come to Israel. So Baruch Hashem, that's wonderful. We're not going to upend anything. Okay. So we read the Bechukot like 2 weeks before Shavuos, big deal. 3 weeks before, like the third Shavuos, where it's not the end of the world. And I think, if it was up to me, nobody's asking me, and nobody's, it's not up to me. I would have combined Achrei Moed and Kedoshim 5 weeks ago. So the million people who are traveling between Israel and Chutz Laaretz, the more than million people, the million Jews who go to Shul, who travel between Israel and Chutz Laaretz in the 3 months, won't hear one Parsha twice and miss the other Parsha. One hear one Parsha, nothing. That to me is more important than this little thing. So you read, already Tosfot changed it. The Ezra was to kind of read it immediately for, and Tosfot changed it a week before. So we'll do it 2 weeks before. So we'll, Tosfot had a good reason to have it. We have another good reason to unify the Jews of Israel and Chutz Laaretz. The idea that why Bamidbar is before Shavuot, that's beautiful ideas. That's very nice, but that's not the reason why. It's like I started to say why we don't say Hallel on the last days of Pesach. So you ask 100 Jews who aren't, you know, so 98 of them will tell you, of course, because the Egyptians are drowning in the sea. Masayadai Tovim B'yom. How can you sing songs? God gets mad at the angels. They're singing, they're drowning, and you're singing. No, no, no. So we don't say
Karbanos.
Right. That's very nice. And it's in the Medrash, but it's not in the Gemara. The Gemara gives we gave a whole shiur about that. The Gemara rejects that reason. The Gemara does not know of that reason. The Gemara does not record that reason. Or it's a totally different reason. So yes, after the fact, it's a beautiful thing. I remember when I was in Yeshiva HaKotel, Rav Hadari, Zal, the Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshiva HaKotel when I was there. So Rav Hadari gave a whole sicha, why Parshat Naso, follow Shavuot. because Naso is the longest portion of the Torah, 176 verses. So after Shavuot, we're reinvigorated the Kabbalah Satorah. So therefore we read Naso, but it's a beautiful thing, but that's a drush. It's ain't sholim al drush. We don't ask questions on drush. It's not the pshat. We read Naso because it's after Bamidbar. We read Naso because we're reading Bichul Kota before, and then everything else flows in. So we look for nice reasons. Beautiful. That's beautiful. But you have to realize that's, added on. Reason. It's not the reason itself. Okay, this was just meant as a 1 minute introduction to the shiur, but okay, what can I do? We'll go through. Who wants to talk about the curses anyway? So we'll do the long. But what Tosfot says, it's funny. So why he says this year Rosh Hashanah is on a Monday, on Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday. So that means Yom Kippur is on a Wednesday. So this year we have a Shabbos between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. When Rosh Hashanah is on, let's say Thursday, Friday, and Yom Kippur is on Shabbos, there's no Shabbos between. So when there's a Shabbos between, we read Nitzavim as a single parsha and Vayelech as a single parsha. So right now, that's great because the end of the year we go to shul so often, so people love it. They come to shul on the Shabbos, on Shabbos Shuvah, a laning of only 30 verses, 40 Vayelech, only 30 verses, the shortest part. Great. I go to shul so much, give me a break. So nobody complains. Okay. But Tosfot wants to know, why don't we combine Nitzavim and Vayelech? And then we can separate Matot Umase, because that's 253 psukim right before Tisha B'Av, a week before Tisha B'Av. Matot Umase, too, so long. So it's not for this reason. You want to separate. You want to set up the curses to be read at the proper time. So we're going to combine Matot Umase, 253 psukim. And
we want Dvarim before Tisha B'Av.
Yeah, that's also right. That's not what Tosfot says there. That's also interesting. It's the Tosfot. Maybe at the end of this year, we'll go take a look at the Tosfot together. I'm happy to do that. On Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. Tosfot, again, doesn't mention anything that Sefer Dvarim should be Tisha B'Av. But yes, I think many of us were taught the many reasons why Sefer Dvarim, and it makes a lot of sense. Moshe begins Sefer Dvarim, talking about going to the land of Israel. That's his first thing, Chedem Aragmin. That's what Tisha B'Av. So it is, really fits in. That's for a number of reasons why Devarim is read before Tisha B'Av. But again, that's not what the Gemara says. There is, I don't now know where the source is, and I have to look, where the Gemara said Somo Utslu, fast, and Slu is slotas, to pray, Davin. So that means you read Ve'et Chanan after Tisha B'Av, not Devarim before Tisha B'Av. Of course, if you read Ve'et Chanan after Tisha B'Av, you're reading Devarim before Tisha B'Av. But that source, the idea is to read Ve'et Chanan after Tisha B'Av. Again, it's fast, and then Davin. And then Moshe Davin, Ve'et Chanan, and God didn't listen. In many ways, Ve'et Chanan is the continuation of Tisha B'Av. In other words, Tisha B'Av is the loss of sovereignty in the land of Israel, and Ve'et Chanan is Moshe wanting to go to Israel, and God saying no. So in a certain sense, it's Shabbos Nachamu, the way, and this is true in Israel and in Chutz Laaretz every single year. Beit Chanan is Shabbos Nachamu. That's the parsha of the Shema, the parsha of the Aseret Dibrot, lots of beautiful things. But the beginning of the parsha is a depressing part. Moshe pleaded, and God basically told him to shut up. I mean, that's how Rashi, I mean, it's not the, I know that sounds very, you know, coarse, but that's what how the Midrashim put it. God said, enough, Moshe, I've had it, leave, just stop it. I've heard you pray enough. You're not going to Israel. End of story. Don't bug me anymore. So anyways, that's just interesting. So that, I don't know. I don't think that's in the Gemara, but I'd have to check this idea of Somo Utslu. But, you know, it's all very beautiful. And, you know, how our parshiyot are set up. But the Gemara doesn't have too many of it, the way you have to do it. That the main one is before Purim and Pesach, the Arba Parshiyot, the Dalit Parshiyot, and here. But otherwise, I'm not aware that the Gemara says to read this before here, this before there. Like we read on Chanukah by Yeshev all the time. Miketz, once in a blue moon, it's by Yeshev. We always read Miketz on Chanukah. Well, so everybody gives the drasha, Yosef, you know, the assimilation, you know, it's all, you can make a beautiful drashot, but that's a total fluke that we read Miketz on Chanukah. It's nothing, there's no reason to read Chanukah and Miketz. It's just the way the Torah reading works out. Okay, let's discuss the Parsha a little bit. Okay. Theme of Vayikra. Let's go. It's the last parsha. So Vayikra, I guess I'll ask the following question. I have to skip a little bit. You know, we have, there are five books in the Chumash. So there are five books for a reason, because there are five different themes. Why not one book? Torah is not one book. Torah is five books. As a matter of fact, I forget who's giving the shiur in 2 weeks, but when we get to Balotchan by Hivin Soharon, the Gemara has quotes of Pasuk Chatzva Amudeh Hashiva. There are seven pillars, and those are the seven pillars of the Torah. The Torah is made up of seven books. Vayehi bin Soa is a sefer bifnei atzmo. Those are the two nuns. According to one opinion, the Chumash is not a Chumash. It means five. The Chumash is a Shiva. You know, it's 1/7. There's seven books of the Bible. And that has halachic implications. What makes a sefer? 85 letters, a whole discussion. But Vayehi bin Soa, now, what's the logic there? Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful drasha there. That basically, that was the... That was the point where Moshe knew, like, that's, it's all over. But even so, the Gemara says, if you remember, but even so is right before complaining and right after complaining. They ran away from Har Sinai. The Medrash criticizes the Jewish people. That's it. The Nun, the Nefilah, the falling down. So Moshe, it was before Chayim and Raklim, it was before, but that was it. He knew this generation wasn't ready to go to the land of Israel. So up to Vayehi bin Soharon is like the journey to Israel. And then after Vayehi bin Soharon is why we're spending 40 years in the desert. So that's the logic behind why Bamidbar may really be three books. But we, of course, all assume the Chumash is five books. But each one of the books has its own theme. And their Bamidbar has two themes, you know, but each one has themes. So what's the theme of Vayikra, if I were to ask you? What's the theme of the book, the overarching theme of Vayikra?
Holiness.
Karbanos, Torah Kohanim.
Karbanos, Torah Kohanim. It's called in rabbinic literature the Book of the Priest. It's all very nice. The problem is that that gets you through Vayikra and Sav. By Tazri already. By the fourth parsha, you got a problem here. Not so many korbanos anymore. Yeah, a woman who gives birth has to bring a korban, but that's it. We stopped korbanos. There's Ria Metzora, we're talking about Tuma V'Tahara. Achrei Mot, the same idea, really. And then we get into Kedoshim. Wow, Kedoshim, the most important, Rashi says, it's the most important chapter in the entire Torah. Rav Gufei Torah Tluim Ba. The majority of the essence, Rav Gufei Torah, the majority, Rav Gufei of the meat, the majority of the meat of the Torah, Tluim Ba, is dependent on chapter 19. Honor your parents, pay your worker on time, don't give bad advice, don't take revenge, have honest weights. And of course, Rabbi Akiva's favorite, love your neighbor as yourself. So that's the most important chapter in the Torah. That's what Rashi says. And then we have Emor, the holidays, Bahar Shemitah, a little bit back to Israel. A lot of social justice. Don't rip off. I always love to comment. You know, we read last week Shemitah and Yovel. So how does the Torah present Yovel? It presents Yovel in the sense that how we shouldn't rip off somebody. When they sell land to somebody, so since you only get a 50-year lease maximum on the land, since land goes back after 50 years, so if I buy land in the 22nd year of the Yovel and you buy it in the 34th year of the Yovel, you have to get a cheaper price because you only have 16 years to use the land. I get 28 years to use the land. So the Torah warns us, and most people, they don't know when Yovel is. The guy's 22 years old. He never heard of Yovel. When's Yovel? So he doesn't know. So you can take advantage. Be mispar shneitz for what? Make sure there's enough wheat, enough cycles of gathering in the food. So don't Yovel, like everything in the Torah, is, even though it sounds like a ritual law, well, it's presented. It has an ethical structure, an ethical backbone. So that the Yovel, you have to make sure you don't charge the person extra. Ona'ah, the laws of Ona'ah, price gouging, were in last week's Parsha in the context of Shemitah and Yovel. So, and then what do you have in the end of Shemot? So the end of Shemot, you have the Mishkan. So I don't know. If I'm the editor of the Torah, again, the same way nobody asked me to set up the Parsha, thank God nobody asked me to edit the Torah. But if I'm the editor of the Torah, I put the Mishkan in Sefer Vayikra, and I take Kedoshim, Emor, Bahar, and I put it into Shemot. Doesn't that make so much more sense? Shmot Mishpatim. So follow Mishpatim, Kedoshim, and they work together. It's the same theme. What you stick in the middle of Shmot, the Mishkan. The Mishkan goes with the Kohanim, with Korbanos. You build the Mishkan. So why does the Torah split?
Can I call you back after connect?
Well, no. So why does the Mishkan, why does the Torah split the Mishkan and the Kohanim and the Korbanos. Anybody have any ideas? Okay. So I think that I the simple answer to me is because the Torah doesn't go by these false narratives. The Torah doesn't believe in ritual and ethics. That's what I just was saying by Yovel. Torah doesn't go by that. That's how we talk. There are the ritual mitzvot and the ethical mitzvot. The Torah doesn't have such a decree. Torah only has ethical mitzvot. That's it. Torah hates rituals. How do I know the Torah hates ritual? Because I read Yeshayahu, I read Amos, I read on the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, I read that Yeshayahu says, God, it's through Yeshayahu, says, your festivals and your new moons, I hate them. Me, get out of my temple. I don't need you trespassing in my temple. I don't want your korbanot. I read on Yom Kippur morning at the Haftorah. The Haftorah says, is this a fast? Take your hand and then punch your heart. That's not a fast. A fast is to feed the poor, right? The Gemara says the reward for a fast is to give charity. Who cares about fasting? Who cares about, right? Yonah, right? The Gemara says it very clearly. God didn't see their fasting. They ripped their clothes. God couldn't care less they ripped their clothes. If they ripped their clothes, gets them to change their actions, great. So every ritual, the only reason to have rituals in Judaism is to have ethics. Every ritual reflects, we keep Shabbos, so we have to treat so because we were slaves in Egypt, right? That's what it says in the second set of the Ten Commandments. Because you have to treat your worker properly. You got to give your worker a day off. You got to give your non-Jew. You have a law firm. Got to give the non-Jews a day off. You can't let them come into work to the office on Shabbos. So every, what we call ritual is really ethics. Just the ethics is brought out. The Torah wants us to express the ritual. The Torah knows if we don't fast on Yom Kippur, we're not really going to feel the pain of the poor. Unless we go hungry for a day, we don't know what it's like to go hungry. So the Torah says you must go through these rituals in order to draw out the ethics. Well, we know it's obvious. We know it, but we don't observe it. The prophet, they don't. Ritual without ethics is probably worse than no ritual. Probably better to do nothing than to, you know, that's the famous Gemara in Yuma. One of my favorite Gemaras that, if a person is dishonest and he's not nice, but he observes the mitzvah between man and God, what do people say about him? Oi, oi, how terrible he learned Torah. This guy, this phony baloney, he learned Torah. Look at him. He's not a nice person. He's a cheat. I think the only explanation of that Gemara is if someone is going to be cheating in business, not a nice guy, please take off your kippah, don't keep kosher. I mean, don't keep kosher, that's a little harder to say, but for sure take off your kippah. But the simple shot in the Gemara is don't keep kosher either. Because people will see that he keeps kosher, he's so religious, got to keep kosher, look at him in the business world. So it's hard, but that to me is a simple reason. So the Torah always, it's all over the place. I mean, the notion that the Aseret Hadivrot on Shavuot, half of it is between man and man, half of it is between man and God. What is that? It means it's one. The beautiful idea. You don't have to read the Aseret Hadivrot vertically. You can read them horizontally, right? Anochi Hashem. If you believe in God, then you don't kill people because we're creating the image of God. Don't have other gods, then you don't commit adultery, right? The Aseret Hadivrot, you don't read it 1-5 and 6-10. You read it 1, 6, 2, 7. 3, 8, 4, 9, right? We keep Shabbos, don't bear false witness, because the Shabbos is our testimony that we believe there's a God in the world. Even 5 and 10, Kaved et Avicha et Imecha, honor your parents, because the only people, the Gemara says, the only people we're not jealous of, the only people who aren't jealous are parents and teachers. Everybody's jealous of everybody. It's a human nature almost. It's the hardest of the Ten Commandments is Lo Tachmod. For sure, that's the hardest one to keep. But the Gemara says for parents and children, that's parents get so much joy when the child does better than they. So the Torah is completely, the idea that there's a division between ethics and ritual is a foreign concept. And that's why that to me is a simple, it's a very simple idea. You know, you should have taught this in kindergarten, but we don't stress it enough. So I don't think. And what I see in Jewish education, I don't see this stress enough. We put a lot of stress on Sof Zman Kriyat Shema. That's all very nice. It's nothing. It's good. Provided the basics are there. It's like, I remember Rav Schechter told us once, the Chacham Tzvi, like in the Ripley's Believe It or Not of of Shelot v'Tshuvot, not the Chacham Tzvi, his son, Rav Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden, who is an extremely colorful personality. He was, all these people were extremely colorful, a lot of them. So Rav Yaakov Emden has a response to, can you count the golem in a minyan? He has a real tshuva. Can the golem? The Maharal makes a golem, or he doesn't make a golem, whatever. And the golem comes to shul. Does he count for a minyan? So he says, of course not, because in order to count as a golem, first you have to be a human being. And Rav Shakto says, you have to be a human being, and then once you're a human being, and then you can be a Jew. In other words, you go golem, human being, Jew. You can't be a Jew really, until you're till you keep the Shavuot mitzvah. I know. Till you observe the basic mitzvot, you can't be an observant Jew. So there's sort of a hierarchy. One is a prerequisite for the other. Okay, that's just enough of my. I don't want to sound preachy at all, but I think it is that to me is the simple explanation to it. Anybody have any comments or questions or Seder? If you don't like that, Seder. Okay, so but let's go here. Why are the curses listed here, and then we'll get into a little bit of them, I hope, one or two, just an overview. Why is the Tochacha listed here in Bechukotai and not in the aftermath of Har Sinai? In other words, God gave us the Torah at Mount Sinai, and you have the Seret HaDibrot. So why didn't right there the Torah list off all the warnings? If you don't keep it, why do you wait till the end of your Shemitah? Why do you go through the whole thing and do it right at the end? So the first answer is this is at Har Sinai, right? We tend to forget. Sefer Vayikra takes us to Mount Sinai. Now, how do I know that? Because the last verse in Sefer Vayikra says, Elu ha-mitzvot asher tzivah Hashem et Moshe el b'nei Yisrael b'Har Sinai. The last two words of Sefer Vayikra, Har Sinai, they haven't left. They're going to leave in Parshat Balotcha on the 20th of Iyar. They're there for just under a year. They arrive on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and they're stay in Mount Sinai. They build they get the Torah, they build the golden calf, they get forgiven Yom Kippur, they build the Mishkan, they wreck the Mishkan, Nisan, Nadav and Avihu died, Pesach Sheni. That all takes place. Pesach Sheni is already where in Sefer Bamidbar. All of this takes place at Har Sinai. So Rashi's question last week, the pshat of when Rashi's famous question, Ma'inyan Shmita Eitzel Har Sinai. In other words, they are at Har Sinai. In other words, all the mitzvot in Vayikra took place at Har Sinai. This whole book of Vayikra takes place at Har Sinai. So now, why is it here? So why is it in Parshat Bechukotai? So the simple reason, it sounds a little strange. I think the simple reason is because the Torah was supposed to end here. This should really be the end of the Torah. Why should it be the end of the Torah? Because I just told you there's seven books to the Torah, right? After Vayehi Bin Soa. Had the Jewish people not sinned, what would have happened next? They're at Har Sinai. God would have said, march from Har Sinai, go to Israel. 11 days, you're there. They had a miracle. They got there in 3 days. That's what they say. 11 days, 11 day travel. So they would have gone straight to the land of Israel. So you don't have Shlach Lecha, you don't have Korach, you don't have Bilam, you don't have Reuven and Gad, and you don't have the book of Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu telling a second generation, don't make the mistakes of the first generation. So this really, Vayikra, and the little first part of Bamidbar, but then they would have stuck it in to Vayikra probably. In other words, the Torah, if you think about it, really should have ended here. Bamidbar is a tragic book. Bamidbar is a book of failed a failure. That's really what the book is. It's one after another, one mistake after another. Okay, that's part of life and part of growing. And you can't expect a generation of slaves to go in. So the simple reason is that the Torah, this is the end of the Torah in a funny way. The same way we started by saying it's the end of the year. So it's the end of the year. So we read it. This is kind of the end of the Torah. And as the Torah ends, we God warns us sort of as his last idea, not to sin, maybe. And if you have a better explanation, I'm happy to hear it. Now, the truth of the matter is not exactly the end of Vayikra, because there is, Vayikra has 27 chapters, and the Tochacha goes through chapter 26. Chapter 27, the smallest book, Vayikra, right? It's chapter 27 talks about Erchin. It's this weird halacha, right? Today, it means if a person says, I want to dedicate myself to God. So if you're between 20, if you're under 20 and between 20 and 50, and if you're a male, if you're a female, the Torah lists off how much the quote unquote, the worth, erech alai, how much is the worth of the human being, whatever that means, that they have to dedicate to the temple. So I thought maybe this is a little bit of a stretch. I thought that this is, again, this ties into the beginning of the Torah. What's the beginning of the Torah? The beginning of the Torah is man creates, God creates man in his image. That's really the first message of the Torah. We know, right, that we don't understand creation from the Torah. The purpose, the first chapter of Bereshit is basically to tell us that man is created in God's image. Story of creation, man is the pinnacle of creation, and man has to partner with God. And man fails. That's chapters 2, 3, 4. That's through chapter 11 or whatever. 10, that's through chapter 6. And man fails. And we're going to start again. Noah succeeds. He's the only one. And we're going to start again. And again, man fails. And then, okay, God says, okay, I'm not going to work with everybody. Let's work with Abraham and create this great nation. But the beginning of the Torah is all about man's love of God's love of man and creating him in his image. So the end of the Torah, so to speak, the end of Vayikra, is this notion of man dedicating himself to God. In other words, Vayikra doesn't end with the curses. We don't want to end right with the curses. We don't want to end the year just with the curses. So the Torah throws in an extra chapter. The extra chapter says a person who's so in love with God that he wants to sort of dedicate his entire being to God. So he says, everything I have, you know, goes to God. So the Torah lists off what he's doing. So that's to me like the reverse. We're created in God's image and we want to do to come back to God. Okay, that's one idea. Now let's tie in the beginning of Vayikra to the end of Vayikra, the book. So we said, what's the major theme of Vayikra? So I said we don't distinguish between ritual and ethics, but I didn't really say what the major theme was. It's Torah Kohanim, right? It's called Torah Kohanim, the book of the priest, and the priests are the ones who work in the temple. So that, okay, it's not just Korbana, but that's true. Vayikra and Sav is all about Korbanas. Tazria Mitzorah has a lot to do with Kohanim. Itta Achrimot, of course, is all Kohanim, the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. And Emor has a lot of Kohanim. So there's a lot of laws of Kohanim. But really, the theme of Vayikra is we're all Kohanim. Right, it's the continuation of Shemot, Vatem Teyulim, Amlechet Kohanim, B'Goyam Kadosh. That's why the holidays are in Parshat Emor. Parshat Emor, what are the holidays doing in Vayikra? Parshat Emor begins with all the laws of the Kohanim, Emor LaKohanim. That's all the laws, who a Kohen can marry and what disqualifies them from working in the temple. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we switched all the holidays. Why? That's to teach us that everybody's a Kohen. In our religion, we don't, the priest isn't, in other religions, the priest has rights and abilities that other people don't have. You have 9 Kohanim, you don't have a minion. You know, every Jew can be a Kohen. So the holidays is the spreading out of the kahuna from the limited people who work in the temple, the small tribe, to entire Klal Yisrael. When we all have to come together, the entire Jewish people have to come to the temple because we're all Kohanim. We're all Kohanim. So that what Vayikra is doing is expanding the role of the Kohen. Yes, of course, you can't have everybody working in the temple, but philosophically, fundamentally, every person is a Kohen. So Sefer Vayikra, what's the first Rashi in Sefer Vayikra? It's Vayikra. Right. So if you remember, the Aleph is very small in Vayikra. Right. It says, and you open up a Sefer Torah, the Aleph is written small. Like they forgot to put it in. They add it in the end. Why? So Rashi says to distinguish the love that God has towards the Jewish people.
Moshe and Bilam.
Right. Moshe and Bilam. Exactly. Vayikra. Vayikra is a term of endearment. Lashon Chiba. God loves. He loves us. Vayikar. Vayikar Lumet Bilam. Vayikar is, as we'll see, this carry is not permanent, temporary, you know, passing by, fleeting. God's relationship with Bilam, Vayikar, yeah, he had a relationship, but it's not a permanent one of love. It's a fleeting, occasional type of a relationship. So that Aleph basically tells us the theme of the book. The theme of the book is the relationship it's the whole Torah, but especially in Vayikra, because Vayikra is the most heavily ritual of the book. It is the most ritualized of the books of the Torah. So it's about our relationship to God. But are we going to have a permanent relationship? Are we going to have a strong permanent relationship? or are we going to have a very weak type of a relationship? And so that's how Vayikra begins. Now, I think five times the Torah says, "Belachtem imi bekeri." We will follow God bekeri. It's sort of a funny word, right? It's somebody who's not. It's not a permanent relationship. We have an occasional relationship with God. So that's failing to live up to the Vayikra. So Bechukotai is sort of the warning. The Vayikra tells us that God loves us. He calls out to us. But God wants a special relationship with the Jewish people. Only the Jewish people are Torat Kohanim, Amamlechet Kohanim. And Bechukotai is when we have not such a permanent relationship. How does Rashi say, Im Bechukotai Te Lechu? What is Im Bechukotai Te Lechu? It's actually a very difficult, it's so hard to observe this, right? Rashi, Im Bechukotai Te Lechu. If you follow my statutes, so what I think it means, Vet Mitzvot Tai Kishmoro, and you follow my mitzvot. So what do I think it means? It means I'm a nice religious Jew. You know, I keep kosher, I keep Shabbos, I give tzedakah. You know, I'm honest fellow. I honor your parents. You know, yeah, I follow the chukim and the mitzvot. I follow even those laws that I don't understand so well. The chukim, you know, I don't eat meat and milk together, even though I don't really understand what's wrong with that. And, you know, and shatnes, I don't wear shatnes. I don't shave with a razor. You know, I don't, but that's not what Rashi says. Rashi says that's all encompassed in the mitzvotai tishmoro. Rashi says in bechukotai tilechu to you amelim b'torah. You have to work hard, amel. You have to effort. And that's of course the basic difference between the Jewish attitude towards success and the world which we live in. Which has to work the way in the secular world. You know, success is defined by the bottom line. In the Jewish world, success is defined by effort. Because the bottom line, we believe, is up to God, right? All our success and our failures to 50%, 60%, 80%, whatever it is, it's beyond our control, right? That's a very hard lesson, but said it many times, right? Our success is where we were born, who our parents were, what education we got. We lucked out, all the opportunities that we have. So yes, we took advantage of them. So we get a little credit, but so much of our success is because of factors beyond our control. The farmer knows that the best. That's the Torah's message always. The farmer knows they can work day and night. And if it doesn't rain, it's all meaningless. They don't control their fate. And the same thing in reverse. Listen, with COVID, if you're in the travel business, the restaurant business, you can be the smartest guy in the world. You just lost your business. It's not because of you. So that's a very important message that the Torah is trying to harp home all the time at us that, it's not through us. But we get judged for effort. Because success is up to God. So im bechukotai te lechu means that you work really hard. If you're really, really bright, so you don't have to learn so much. You know, in 1 second you pick it up. I'll play baseball the rest of the day. No, it is important to learn. You know, with the goal to know something. But the purpose of learning is learning. It's the process of learning. That's why traditionally Talmud is considered much more much more important than halacha. Maybe in practice we follow halakha, but it's daf yomi. We don't have daf shulchan aruch. Maybe people won't be interested in it. Maybe Gemara's more exciting, whatever. But it's the process of learning. And as Rav Soloveitchik would always say, to study the opinion of Beit Shammai is the same mitzvah of Talmud Torah to study the opinion of Beit Hillel. Even though you know in advance you're not going to follow Beit Shammai, it doesn't matter. Torah, like halakha man, Torah is a description of God. So every aspect of Torah we learn, we're connecting to God. Vayikra, God calls out to us. That's what Talmud Torah is. His devotion is clinging onto God. That's one of the arguments Rav Lichtenstein uses, why women today in our generation, the way we cling to God much more through Torah. So women have to learn Torah, forget whatever the technical obligation, in order to come close to God. We do that through the medium of Torah. So the practical application is almost irrelevant. And we know, the Lithuanian approach maybe took this a little too far, those who critique it a little bit, where they totally divorced the Gemara from halacha. And there was Rav Soloveitchik, and halachic man goes, you know, the halacha is like being nobody wants to do that. That's like the practical side. I want to live in the world of ideas. You know, we've said many times, Rav Chaim took kashrut from pots and pans and he made it into concept. We want to live in this theoretical, like in the ivory tower, you know, because connecting to God. But we also have to have a halacha, halacha lemaisa. So that's different approaches, how far in the spectrum you go. But the idea is that the important aspect is the effort we put in. That's what we say at a siyum. Anu emelim ve'em emelim. Anu emelim comes, we work and they work. We work and get a reward. They work and don't get a reward. What does that mean? So everybody explains, we get the reward for the work we do, not for the bottom line. In the secular world, and that's the way it should be, and we're part of that world too. In the world of business, the reward is not to have, nobody cares how much time you put in. They care, the bottom line, are you successful? And but that's not how the Torah world works. In the Torah world, we know God determines a lot of our success, so we only get rewarded for effort. But then you have to work hard. We have to put real effort. So that's imichu kotai telechu, that you have to really, really work very hard for Torah. But that's not an easy thing to do. But okay, we try our best. So that's and that again, it ties into this whole theme. If the theme of Sefer Vayikra is to Dor Kohanim. Kohanim have a special relationship with God. All the Jewish people are Kohanim. Vayikra, God calls out us. He's distinguishing up. I have a special relationship with you that I don't have. In Sefer Bereshit, God has a relationship with mankind. God creates Adam. He doesn't create Jews. He creates Adam. Only later on does it come to Avram. But the idea of Bereshit is universal themes. And all in the first 11 chapters, all the universal themes, murder, incitement, all the themes that are so important in life, they're human themes. They're not Jewish themes. And even Shemot, where we've become a nation, of course, that's great and that's true. We begin the process. But even Bereshit, the themes of freedom and liberty and all, you know, that's a very much universal themes. We begin the process of the uniqueness of the Jewish people. And that reaches its height, the special relationship between God and Jewish people. That's Vayikra. And that's why it's so technical, so temple and purity and impurity and holiness, right? Right. We discussed, I think, a few weeks ago, this thing between morality and holiness. To be holy is on top of being moral, right? You can be moral and not holy, right? Holiness, that holiness is a special Jewish requirement that we have. So that's Book of Vayikra, but to you amelim b'Torah. Now, so it's the effort and the work we put in. And of course, that's not how we judge anybody. We judge anybody by the bottom line. But we all know the guy who has a brilliant head and he knows Gemara off by heart is less impressive than the guy who works really, really hard to figure something out. And even though he knows a lot less, that's a much higher level of learning. Okay, if you can do both. Now, okay, let's just talk a little bit. So we have to just carry God. You know, we have to walk with God on a permanent basis. Now, the rewards of the Torah, this is the last theme I think we'll talk about, is why the rewards of the Torah are very blasé. It's going to rain in the proper time. Like, who do we really think about raining in the proper time? I mean, it depends where you live, but the reward, you know, your sheep will give, won't have any blemishes. And why does the Torah never talk about the ultimate reward, the world to come, the messianic age, the highest we get to, and this is pretty high, I don't mean to God for this, is would be amazing, is peace. But you don't get any, there's no spiritual rewards in the Torah. All the rewards in the Torah are, I mean, that's in the Shema, but it's the same thing here. Right? Isn't that what it says here? But seriously, get diet, zerev, you'll eat, you'll be satisfied. You'll dwell in peace. That's a wonderful thing. That's a great blessing. But there's nothing spiritual about any of these blessings. Why not? Somebody's got to answer something, no? Anybody have any ideas? So again, right. So, you know, I think in the sort of apologetic way or something, they'll say, well, of course, the real rewards are spiritual. But the only way to have spiritual reward is if we have material blessings. So that is true. And when you're impoverished, you know, it's very hard to grow spiritually when you're impoverished. There's this sort of misconception, you know, Jews were, for much of our history, we were not wealthy. That's not always true either. But, you know, but despite our tremendous poverty, you know, look at what we produce. So the truth of the matter is, no, everything great was produced in a period of prosperity. The reason we study Talmud Bavli and not Talmud Yerushalmi is because the Jews living in Babylonia and Iraq had a very, with the Persians, that's basically where it developed, had a pretty good life. And the Jews living in Israel had a pretty crummy life. They're Romans, and they couldn't complete it. The Talmud Yerushalmi was never finished properly. That's why people historically great rabbis didn't study the Yerushalmi. I mean, today, you know, I think did our school finish doing the Yerushalmi? I don't even know. Today, the Rambam studied Yerushalmi, but because it wasn't properly done, there was persecution. With the great books in Jewish history were generally written in periods of calm and quiet. The golden age in Spain or in Poland, or, you know, the wonderful years in Poland. It's very hard when you're being persecuted to write the book. So that's what they say. I'm saying, in order to develop our Torah, if we have material blessings, then, that will allow us to develop our spiritual side. So that's very nice, and it's true, but it's still ha'ikar chaser min ha'sefer, as they say. But still, you would think the Torah would write the ultimate reward, not the means to the reward. In other words, this is just the means to the reward. So I think, listen, if you want to give a historical, very non-religious answer, you can say, well, you know, this is part of the Torah that was written for, you know, a bunch of slaves who left Egypt. And just like the Rambam says, the Torah really doesn't like sacrifices, but they had no choice. You know, what are we going to do? And can't have a world without sacrifices. Or why does the Torah laws of slavery? The Torah would like to get rid of slavery, but it can't get rid of slavery. So the Torah, oh, you want to have a slave? Okay, so give slave off on Shabbat. If you have steak, the slave eats steak. So all of a sudden, the slave becomes a member of the household. So we don't abolish slavery. We just elevate slavery. So that's the Torah has a lot of laws. Yifatoar, the Torah has a lot of laws that are not ideal, but it's talking to, it was given it to it. In a historical context, some people don't like this whole approach, but you know, that's the Rambam's approach and whatever, and they're not the only one. So you could argue that because to the people who left Egypt, what are we going to talk about? They're a bunch of slaves, or even they forget the people of Egypt, us. It's very hard. I think that's really, it's very hard for us to, we're material beings. And that's how we respond. And that's what we look at. So the Torah talked about what sort of we can relate to, what speaks to us. And then take it just a step further. I think, first of all, to the world to come, we can't relate to at all. If the Rambam is right, there's no time in the world to come. We don't know what that means. What does it mean to live beyond time? We say God lives beyond time. So, you know, these are concepts that we don't understand. But I think the reason I like the best is that because, you know what? The Torah couldn't care. I'm going to say it in a harsh way. I don't mean it the way exactly it sounds, but the Torah couldn't care less about the Messianic era and the world to come. The Torah cares that you lead an ethical life and you make this world a better place. God created man and he made him his partner, gave him his image. And he said, I created an incomplete world. You go finish the world. Prua ars v'chiv shua, you conquer the world. You discover a cure for cancer. You develop vaccines. You build bridges, as the Rambam said. And then you dig, you make cities. You create. In other words, the Torah is very here and now centered. Help the poor, feed the naked. I'm sorry, feed the poor, clothe the naked. The Torah is very, don't worry about, don't philosophize. It's very nice, you know, in the Middle Ages or the Rambam Rav Sajak, going to philosophize. But the Torah is, you got to do something. It's kind of like, it's really unrelated. But since I happen to be talking about this in chat today, we're talking about on staka. So I asked, you know, why is there no bracha on the mitzvah of staka? Such an important mitzvah. The Rambam says it's the most important mitzvah, positive mitzvah in the Torah. More important than eating matzah, you know, more important than tefillin, mezuzah. Giving tzedakah. So why is there no bracha on tzedakah? Anybody? Anybody listening? Okay. Why is there no bracha on tzedakah? So
no there limit.
I'm sorry?
No limit. Also.
Yeah, so there are different reasons.
Also, if you're going to wait to make the bracha, the guy you're going to give it to.
Right. So along the lines we're saying now, just give tzedakah. Don't worry about brachas. When brachas is between you and God, your relationship to God. But when we deal with other people, just help the other person. I think it's really more. I think if I make a bracha on tzedakah, it means I'm not really interested in you. I don't give tzedakah. You're not supposed to give tzedakah because it's a mitzvah. You're supposed to give tzedakah because it's the right thing to do, right? That's why the Torah says, im kesef talveh. If you lend money, if you give someone a loan, and the rabbis comment, if means when. It means you're obligated to. So why does it write if? So the Maharal says you should give tzedakah like you're a volunteer, because obviously, what I mean, I don't really want to give you money, but God commanded, I'll make a reference. So insensitive, such a terrible thing to do. We're supposed to give tzedakah because it's the right thing to do. We keep kosher because God said so, but we don't give tzedakah because God said so. No, some people don't want to do it on their own, so then they have to do it because God said so. But ideally, that's how the Rambam writes. When it comes to these ethical mitzvot, the Rambam writes you do them because it's the right thing to do. But the bottom line is the Torah says, just do it, just help people. The Torah is not interested in philosophical concepts and speculating when the Mashiach will come. And the Rambam himself, the Rambam writes in the last, is in 1,000th chapter, you know, the Rambam divided the Mishnah Torah into 14 books. And I there are 1,000 chapters. And, you know, the Rambam was, besides being a super genius in philosophy and medicine and halakha and everything, the Rambam was a super unbelievable organizer, like unbelievable. And it's so beautiful. There are 1,000 chapters in the Mishnah Torah. Believe me, that's not a coincidence. And so in the 1,000th chapter of the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam talks about, okay, we've done everything. Now we'll talk about the future. So now he talks about the Mashiach. And you know what the Rambam says? Don't talk about the Mashiach. Because that's what basically the Rambam says. He says, we have no idea how he's going to come. You know, well, we'll know when he comes. We'll figure out how he came. But the Rambam wants to, you know, get rid of messianic, you know, speculations. We don't know. And that's where the Rambam puts, he thinks that the only difference between this world, not the only, it's a big only. The only difference between our world and the messianic world is peace. But you know what? Don't worry about 100 years from worrying now. So I know it's again very basic, but I think that's why the Torah always gets its rewards in very materialistic and very basic rain, grain, and up to peace, which is wonderful. That's good enough. We don't have to worry about Mashiach. Okay, I'll just end with one idea, Ta'abet. Where the it says in the brachot, the beginning, right? The Torah starts with brachot, has curses, and then ends with, you know, on the positive note. It says if we follow the mitzvot, so uradaftem, what does it say? Chamishamichem meo meimichem revava yirdofu. 5 will chase 100, and 100 will chase 10,000. So Rashi makes the calculation. Hold on, 5 chases 100, 5 righteous people, 5 Jews, the enemy who come, but if we're good, 5 of us can defeat 100, and 100 of us can beat 10,000. The math doesn't work. 5 to 100 is a 20-to-1 ratio. So whereas 100 to 10,000 is 100-to-1 ratio. So how come the ratio changes? So we know there is a difference. 5, right? One person can't be 3 people, but maybe 3 people could be 9, maybe. But Rashi says, "Eino dom." It's not the same thing. A few people keeping Torah and a lot of people keeping Torah. That really, if what I said at the beginning is correct, that Sefer Vayikra is the central book of the Torah. It is the third book of the Torah. And the minhag used to be to teach children. You began children teaching Torah. If it's the culmination of the Torah, Bereshit Shmot, and Vayikra is God calling out the love, developing our relationship. And don't walk with God just temporarily, Vayikar. Vayikra, we have to have worked hard, amelim. What will be, we don't know what will be. We just put in the effort. So if Vayikra is the essence of the Torah, so to speak, it's the central book of the Torah. So, and chapter 19, we said, is the most important chapter. That's what Rashi quotes, Rabbi Akiva, the most important chapter in the Torah. So the most important blessing we have is when the Jewish people come together as one. That we have that in Dvarim also by Yibishur and Melech Bitasev Rosh Hayam. When the nation come together, that's when we can coronate God. Only when we're a united nation. When we're a united people, we can do everything. Right? When the Jewish people are united, we're powerful. When we are disunited, we get exiled. And whether we read Bechukotai a week before Shavuos or 2 weeks before Shavuos or 3 weeks before Shavuos, right? The Rashi, famous Rashi, that we came to Har Sinai. Vayichan sham Yisrael tacharar. The Jewish people encamped in the singular, b'lev echad, with one person, like one person, one heart. The Jewish people, maybe for the only time in our history, maybe then and before the Six-Day War, there was total unity in the Jewish people. That's the message of Shavuot. Yeah, the Gemara says we read Bichukotai. Ezra said we should read Bichukotai because we want to have the curses, get them out of the way. But we want to learn the message of Jewish unity, and that's the only way we can go into Kabbalah Satorah. So maybe that's a second idea. So just let me, what else, just quickly to review, we discussed why we read Bichukotai now. and we have that week break. It should be the year coming to an end. And Shavuos is a year. We have four new years. We have 4 days of judgment. And even though the Gemara distinguishes between them, it appears because the Gemara says, because on Shavuot is a day of judgment for Peirot Eilam, the fruit. Therefore, it's a new year. We judge, we move forward. That's quite a concept. And therefore, we want to get rid of the curse. If you read it, Tosfot says, we don't want it right before Shavuot. So we have a week break. We throw in Bamidbar. Whether there are other reasons why Bamidbar is for Shavuot, could be, but there are for Peseder. But the reason the Gemara gives is B'chukotai should be done before. And then we discuss really Bayikra being the theme of Kohanim, how the Jewish people are our Kohanim. It's basically the Torah progressing from God's creation of man, then the unique relationship that God develops with the Jewish people is really exemplified in Vayikra and Torah Kohanim, because we're all Kohanim. And therefore, in the same Parsha, Emor, where we talk about the laws of Kohanim, we talk about the Jewish people coming to the Beit HaMikdash, all of us, the entire nation, all is Kohanim. And of course, the Torah combines, puts in all these laws, Kedoshim and Shemitah and Onah, right? Price fraud is part of Yovel, and the Ten Commandments, don't kill is the same as believing in God, and don't commit adultery is the same as not to have other gods, because in the Torah, there's no distinction between ritual and ethic. Every ritual has an ethic, and do we fast on Yom Kippur, not to fast? We fast to be sent to the poor. Yeshayahu tells us, get out of my temple, I hate your holidays. Unless your holidays are going to lead to greater ethical sensitivity, God doesn't need them. God doesn't need our fast days. But if he sees our actions, he doesn't see our sackcloth. Our sackcloth is to get us to do action. So therefore, the Torah combines ethics, ritual, they all go together. It's all one. So therefore, we keep the Mishkan and Shemot, and we keep the Kedoshim in Vayikra, even though it would be a sort of a more united theme, one would think, if the Mishkan and the Korbanot went hand in hand. Okay, and that little Aleph from Vayikra, that's Rashi's basically telling us the whole theme of the book. That developed our relationship, and the Chukotai warns us, it's Vayikar. If we have a temporary relationship, it's not good. And a relationship, the main ingredient for the relationship is hard work, effort. How much effort? How successful? We never know. But what God wants us, in Chukotai Telechutiyu Amelim B'Torah, that's how we develop a relationship with God. Even when we learn Torah, it's not the bottom line, what's the halakha? It's the process of learning Torah. Of course, bottom line's important a little bit. And bottom line's important in halakha, and bottom line's important in business, but it's not the most important. What's most important, our relationship with God, is the effort we put in and the hard work that we do. Okay, we'll stop. I'll just take a look at the questions. Any questions here in a minute? I thought, according to the Ramban, Vayikra 25, the Tocha was given with the second tablets. Since giving the first tablets didn't work out well, and therefore it's written here. But the second tablets are given in Kitisa. In other words, if historically, Right. Yes, most people, when were the second tablets given? So they'll say Beit Hanan, right? That's when Moshe repeats what happened 40 years earlier. But the events, the Aseret Divra was given, the Aseret HaDivra were given in, were you trying to talk to me? I'm sorry if I muted you, because it didn't sound right. If you can unmute yourself, I'm sorry. The Aseret HaDivra were given in Yitro, then they were broken. Kitisa, that's the Yud Gimel Midot, that's the Chet Egel. That's when God re-gives this. But it's sort of hidden in the back of Kitisa. It's only a few psukim, you don't really notice it. So I'd have to look at the Ramban again, but there's no second Torah. The second Divra are not in Vayikra, they're in Shmot. Okay, I hope that answers. So what about, for example, the present day role, the Ashkenazic chief rabbi of Israel? Does God want us to be holy? Hold up some people as venerated, intermediate, and represents our faith. I'm not really sure what you mean, but the idea of a chief rabbi, I don't understand your question exactly, if you want to explain. But does want to... we don't believe in intermediaries. Yeah, we believe the Kohanim are the ones who bring the Korban up, but we don't believe in intermediaries. That's not a Jewish concept. We pray directly to God. We don't... That was one of the big critiques of the Hasidic movement. One of the reasons that Vilna Gaon considered it a heresy, because the Rebbe became the intermediary between man and God, and that was considered a heretical concept. That is the very un-Jewish concept. We each have a direct line to God. I mean, I don't know. We don't. No, I mean, we do and we don't. We don't know. We, you know, he knows what God, that we don't have. But everybody has the ability to connect directly to God. It's hard work. That's what Rashi says. You are Melim Torah. It's not easy to do, and but That's what we have to do. But we have to respect rabbis. We have to respect Torah scholars, but we don't revere them. That's avodah zarah. To worship other human beings is avodah zarah. I remember Rav Schachter would always tell us that if you believe a rabbi is infallible, you're in the wrong religion. Our religion, the other religions believe their leader is infallible. In our religion, our leaders make mistakes. And that's a very important point. And we have a whole chapter, a whole masechet in the Talmud, masechet Horayot, Horu Beitin, the Beitin issues. When they made a mistake, the Sanhedrin, the 71 greatest rabbis made, they make mistakes. It happens. We respect them, but okay. I know somebody wrote me a private message. Actually, interesting. Okay. Thank you. Okay, if we're really Kohani, no. The chief rabbi, what is the role of chief rabbi in Israel? That's a political thing, right? We don't have chief rabbis. England has chief rabbis. There's certain countries developed with chief rabbis. That's why Israel has a chief rabbi because England has a chief rabbi. The British mandate. When do you think it started? Rav Kook gets appointed by the British to be the chief rabbi. So we inherited that from the British. That's why England is very different. America, they tried once a chief rabbi in New York City. It was a disaster, Sheba disasters. Rav Yaakov Yosef, who was brought from Vilna, was one of the most tragic periods of the, American. I don't know how many people know that story. They brought Rav Yaakov Yosef, what they call RJJ, the yeshiva RJJ. Rav Yaakov Yosef was the darshan in Vilna. He was like the magid, the great orator. And they brought him to New York. Of course, they voted 16 to 14. In other words, half the community wasn't involved. The people, who's that a chief rabbi? And they brought him in. It was a disaster. And he died impoverished, forgotten about, a sick, broken man. Nobody even forgot about him. And then there was that terrible riot at his funeral. There was a riot. I forget, some group in the factory attack. It was a terrible, it's written up in papers, 1902. So America doesn't go for chief rabbinate. America is very rugged individualism, and it doesn't work. Israel is following the British model, but you know what? I don't know that the chief rabbi works so well in Israel either. But the chief rabbi is meant to, it's a political position. When Rav Soloveitchik was offered the chief rabbinate on a silver platter when Rav Herzog died in 58 or 59, so they offered Rav Soloveitchik, and thank God he turned it down. He said he's not going to be a politician. And he wants the ability to be able to speak out and criticize the government if need be, right? I think I told you the story of Soloveitchik. You criticize the Mizrahi a little bit. People complain, why do you criticize the Mizrahi? Says, why do you think I love the Mizrahi? That's why I criticize them. Just because I'm a member of the Mizrahi doesn't mean I have to agree with everything they do. I'm not in the Aguda. I don't like the Aguda policy overall. I like the Mizrahi policy, but doesn't mean I agree with everything. So, it's a problem. Yeah, Europe, every country has a chief rabbi from Napoleonic period. So I don't know. I don't know my history well enough. How long has England had a chief rabbi for? There's a book written on the chief rabbi. England had a chief rabbi probably since the 1700s. Now, does anybody know who was the first chief rabbi in England? Anybody? I don't know. Maybe you can look it up. Okay. All right. It's late already. Thank you, everybody, for coming. If you liked it, or even if you didn't like it, a second try tomorrow on the Siddur, 9:35 a.m. Please God, we'll have our continuing part 34, I think, of our ongoing series. We'll please God finish Mizmor Shir Chanukah Habayit David and start in Baruch Shamar. And that's more 9:35 a.m. And then Sunday, 11:15 is Rabbi Liebtag. And please God, next week we'll start announcing our new, some continuing, but some of our new programs for after Shavuot. We'll have a number of new speakers coming on board. So, okay, everybody have a wonderful night and be well, and Shabbat Shalom. Hope to see you soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a good night. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for the comments. But if you want, Rabbi Amin, you can take a look on Megillah, Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So, I, and if you have the source where Bamidbar is, I'd like to know. Like, I don't remember Bamidbar. Like, I know that concept, but I don't know where the source is for that. So if you know, you can, that would be great. Okay.
Thank you.
Light the top.